Rabbi Rabinovich, and it was
Love
from
Radio
2.
Renegade Broadcasting.
All right, welcome, welcome. Sorry about that. I was trying to get the music to play there, but I guess it wasn't working. I'll try to fix that issue, and hopefully I'm coming through loud and clear. Thank you so much for tuning in to RenegadeBroadcasting.com. This is the Blitzkrieg Broadcast with Kyle Hunt. As it is the Blitzkrieg Broadcast, I will be covering a lot of material in a very short period of time. Tonight I am going to be having Sinead back on to discuss the troubled teen industry. And it should be a very good show. And I think that this is going to be some material that you really haven't been exposed to for quite some time, because it is one of these things that has been hidden from us. Those of us who think we know what's going on in the alternative media are relatively unfamiliar with this topic. I know I was. So that's why it's something that we should cover. It's very important. Children are basically being mind-controlled, brainwashed, and their parents are paying for it. They're getting scammed into this system. I forgot my thunder earlier. Nobody out there steal this. I don't want anybody stealing my thunder. But let's just play this to make it official that this is the Blitzkrieg Broadcast. All right, very good. I sure do wish that my songs would play, but hey, that is all right. I'm going to try to bring Sinead in and get this conversation started. Hopefully it'll work with Skype. We'll get a good connection with her, and the show will proceed. Oh. It looks like something happened here with my audio seconds. Whoa. All right. Hopefully my call should be coming through all right. It looks like Skype and Blog Talk Radio is having a problem here. So maybe we'll have to have Sinead call back in on a cell phone. It's really not the ideal way to do things. But since this information is important, I'd like to do it however possible. Yeah, cell phones, really, people, you shouldn't be having these up to your heads for any extended period of time. They're untested. They are dangerous, despite what a lot of people out there might have you believe. Yeah, looks like I'm just not able to connect to Blog Talk Radio. My internet is down. All right, gonna hopefully move on. Anyway, this is quite a shame. I think my internet is down in general, but I'm still connected via the phone, or should be. And we'll see what we can do here. It looks like I'm back online. So I'm going to try to reconnect this call. This is no way to start off a broadcast. People, I apologize. I try to take every precaution to make sure that I'm going to be coming through with a quality stream here, but that just is very difficult to do when you're dealing with these variables and you don't have a whole lot of funding behind you to make sure that you've got, a fancy headset and that you've got a good setup, broadcast station with little interference. No, that doesn't seem to be what's in store for people like myself. Now I'm getting booted from the internet again, just not able to maintain any kind of connection. Apologies, folks. Apologies. I'm going to try to get this number over to Sinead so she can call in. If any of you want to call in, the number is 347-633-9657. I'm coming through regardless. It looks like the chat room is able to hear me. Looks like there's already a caller on the line. I'd like to keep these calls topical to the conversation that's going to be had tonight in terms of the troubled teen industry. So give me just, I don't even have the music set to go, at least the ones I wanted to play. Let me go ahead and try play a little bit of music here and see if this comes through for you. No. All right, we'll try this. All right, you know what? I'm going to go to call really quickly here and see what this person has to say. I don't think it's Sinead. But if Sinead is listening out there, the number is 347-633-9657. Hopefully, I will be able to bring you in that way. Yeah, people, you have no idea how frustrating this is to host a show from your cell phone and then continuously get kicked off the internet. It's really not the ideal way to do things, as you can imagine. Wow, it looks like, it's just not working right or working at all. All right, we've got I think this is Sinead.
Yep.
Sinead, are you there? All right,
yep.
Thank you for joining me. Apologies for all these technical difficulties at the beginning, but we're here, and we're going to continue on with this show, even though the sound quality might not be all that great. The information is important, and it should get out there. Thanks so much for coming back on, Sinead.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of ridiculous that this is the second time this has happened. And I've had a good internet connection all day until now. So.
Yeah, same here. And certain shows can just broadcast out completely clear. But then it seems like when you're hitting on certain topics, ones that really haven't been discussed by those other people out there in the alternative media, perhaps some people get a little worried. I do believe that perhaps there is a conspiracy to keep this kind of information under wraps.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked.
So, there was a really good reaction to the show that we did last week. A lot of people were a bit surprised that they had never heard of this before and that it was able to take place right underneath the, right underneath the cover of this, notion that we can help these troubled teens through a program of what amounts to mind control. It's
right,
obviously
what they
given
like.
great marketing, but it
oh,
is
yeah.
Mind control, it's brainwashing.
Absolutely, and it's really, they call it behavior modification, which is a nice way of saying brainwashing and mind control. And like I was telling you, Kyle, they actually said in the program that we are brainwashing you, and said, like, they were more than happy to tell us that because our brains were dirty and they needed to be washed. They would tell us, we're brainwashing you. So, I mean, it was out in the open while you were there. You knew what was going on. But it convinced me that I needed it. I needed that brainwashing because I was just, I was so messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, perhaps that is what some people think should happen to those who they deem toxic. You know, to those who don't fit in with the society, don't want to just go along with all the crap that they see in the world, or who have become infected by it. You know, it's really quite a toxic culture, that is for sure. And the problem is that I think that a lot of people out there want you to blame yourself for the problems that you had, for being troubled. It's your fault. Don't look at the different kinds of circumstances that caused you to be there as a young girl.
Right.
Rather, it's some internal flaw or fault of your own.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's not take a look at the media that I was exposed to at a very young age. Let's not take a look at some of the social engineering that we were all exposed to. But, yeah, just blame yourself and beat up on yourself, get really mad at yourself, and then, you know, maybe things will get better.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you blame your parents for sending you away to one of these programs?
Well, I mean, they were the people that chose to send me away, but I don't have, you know, all this anger towards them because they were conned just like I was conned. You know, I was not in a good place. You know, I was suicidal. I was just miserable. And so, of course, as a parent, you're desperate. You want to try and help your child. And, you know, they shouldn't have allowed me to be exposed to some of the things I did. And, you know, for that, I think they were a little bit retarded, but I don't hate them for it, you know?
They had a completely different idea
of what
would be going on.
Yes. I was in counseling. I was 14 when I got sent to the program. I had been in counseling since probably about 12 because I was, you know, an angry little teenager. And both of my counselors that I was seeing told my parents that you need to send your child away to one of these programs or she's going to die or end up in jail. So imagine, you know, yourself as a parent who genuinely cares and wants the best for your child, even if you don't know what is best for them, and you're being threatened with your child dying, of course you're going to do anything you can to try and save your child's life. So they really scare parents into sending children away to these places. What parent that really loves their child wants to see them dead and then have that on their conscience and they didn't do anything about it, you know? So they really use fear and intimidation.
Yeah. Well, it's a great marketing scheme to scare parents into believing that the only possible solution to having their child fixed is to send them away to this program, or else they're going to be dead. They're going to be dead.
Yep.
You're going to be in prison, getting raped. They're going to be addicted to heroin on the streets. You know, they scare them into saying, that, what else can I do? It's
right.
It's very sad.
They're helpless. And the only help that's available is the program.
Yeah, so we discussed some of the details on the last program about this program, the program that you went to, which was part of this WASP group, WWASP. Now, this group got a lot of bad publicity, so it has, I guess, gone under a few different names or just reemerged as other groups?
This has gone on forever since Synanon, which we talked about last time. You know, that turned into a cult. That didn't look good. So then it changed to CEDU, which it's CEDU, which some people believe it stands for Charles E. Dietrich University. And Charles E. Dietrich was the founder of Synanon. So basically, you know, they just kind of changed the names, same shit, different names. Then you have the WASP programs, which were getting bad press. So now they've changed it to the Youth Foundation, Inc. So, I mean, they'll just keep doing this. They'll just change names, maybe move facilities, and delete. They've deleted a lot of information from the Internet. I don't know how they're able to do this, but things that I was searching for a couple of years ago are just gone.
Yeah, so all that's left is kind of the testimony of people who are not considered to be reliable because they were troubled teens themselves. They were being medicated there. They have a a grudge against the program that was only trying to save their lives.
Yeah.
Or so
yeah,
they
exactly.
think.
Yeah. And you have former program members coming out and basically attacking people like myself that are saying, hey, this is fucked up. We were brainwashed. We were abused. And, you know, they'll say, oh, you're just not taking accountability. You're not looking at your actions and what got you there. It's very cult-like. And, I mean, that's what we were taught to do in the program is attack one another, because if the attention is off of you on someone else, then you're not going to have attention on you. Always good to be yelling at someone else or pointing the finger at someone else, because then you're not being pointed at.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've mentioned to me that they actually pay the parents of people who have gone through the program
yeah.
to give positive testimonials
to other
prospective parents.
Right, yeah. They'll pay them or they'll offer a year's free tuition for their children. So there's definitely an incentive to give a positive recap of what they went through. And, of course, you know, my parents figured, oh, we've talked to all these parents before sending her. They've had great experiences. You know, their families are back together. Their kids are healthy. Meanwhile, these people are being paid to say this. So you think they're going to say anything bad? Probably not.
So what kind of things did they also lie about that would be going on in the program that never happened?
Oh, God. They said that we were going to have equine therapy. I believe that's what it's called. We're going to have horse therapy. I never saw a horse. I was locked in a little facility. I never even left the facility for probably maybe 9 months, and that was to go to a dentist appointment or something. There was no horse therapy. We barely went on hikes. You would have to be activity eligible to go on a hike, even if you're on a high level. Now, I think I covered this before. There's levels 1 through 6. When you're on level 5 and 6, you move to a different facility off campus, so it's like a special privilege, and you're allowed to go on certain activities, maybe a hike, maybe a service project, which would be volunteer work, but you had to be activity eligible. And since this is all a game with points and demerits, if you didn't have enough points to go on that activity, which no one ever did because you're always getting in trouble for something stupid, then you wouldn't be able to go. So, yeah, you might have an activity, but barely anybody gets to go because everybody's always losing points.
Yeah, so it sounds like really a miserable experience where you're in a state of inner turmoil, a state of stress at all times because you're worried about losing points so that you have to stay there longer, about never being good enough, having unexpected things coming your way, not knowing what is ahead, being given a false impression of what you're in for. It's got to really, really screw up your mind there.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you can get in trouble for the dumbest things. Like, let's see, maybe when you go into the bathroom, you have to put all of your belongings in a basket before you go in, because I guess maybe you could like go kill yourself with a pen in the bathroom. I don't know. So say I just forgot to take my pen out of my pants before I went into the bathroom. That would be automatically 5 demerits. You know, it could be anything. It could be putting your foot on the chair. To be talking before, every time we walked into a room, we had 1 minute of silence, and we would all just stare at the clock, because as soon as that minute was up, we were allowed to talk. But if you had to go to the bathroom or anything, you had to ask a question before that minute was up, and you talked, another maybe 10 demerits. It could be the stupidest things. Like, it's like you open your mouth, you take a breath, and you're losing points. It could be anything, and you have to ask permission to do everything. To get out of your dorm room, which the door is constantly open, it's not even a room, it's just like a little nook. You have to ask to cross over. Can I cross out? Can I leave the room? Can I use the bathroom? I mean, anything.
It seems like what's happening here is that they take the model for school, which is pretty restrictive. You know, sometimes you have to get a bathroom pass to go use the bathroom, raise your hand, and say,
yeah.
May I use the bathroom? So you've got some regulations in there. They're not so strict. If you can't follow along with that program, Then it, basically the option is you can go to jail for a short period of time because juveniles are somewhat protected within the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
But if your parents are worried about that, they don't want anything on your criminal record, they can send you away to a place that is like school, but much more restrictive, way, way more involved with mind control techniques. although those are still present in school today and probably getting a lot worse these days.
Yeah.
And then there's even another level beyond that, because if you acted up in your program, what would happen to you?
Oh, my gosh. If we didn't obey the rules, we'd either get sent to Tranquility Bay, which was in Jamaica, which some real bad stuff went down there, where these kids, I talked about it the last time I was on, these kids basically tried to kill another one of their program members because they knew that if someone died, they would shut down the facility. So it was, the conditions were that bad that they would actually try and kill. I mean, and these are your family when you're in there because you're all going through it together and you all you have is each other. You know, so that just tells you how bad things were. The other place you would get sent to, which both of these places have been shut down, the other one is High Impact Mexico, where basically they would have to walk around in circles all day in the hot sun and the desert. And if you, you know, were tired or you didn't want to do anymore, they would put you in what's called the dog cage. And literally it was like a dog cage where you would be in a cage and you would usually be lying down. And you'd have both of your hands, like, shackled. I never experienced this, but I've read accounts and I've heard, you know, stories from people that I know personally that were sent there.
You mentioned the dog cage, but in the last show, you said that somebody at the facility where you were actually would make new female inmates, let's call them, get down and bark like a dog. Now,
this is
very disturbing.
Mm-hmm. And Ron Garrett, and I don't have my computer on me because I'm on the phone, but I could type that into the chat. He's no longer a program director. I think with all of this bad press going his way, he decided to duck out. But, he would, and, you know, he wouldn't force us to, not that that makes it any better, but he would kind of mess with our minds and be like, I want you to get down on the floor and bark like a dog. And then if the girl did it because she's so scared, she doesn't know what the hell's going on, she just wants to follow the rules, she would start to get down, and he'd be like, get up, you're pathetic, how would you do that? But then if you don't do it, he tries and messes with your mind in another way. It's all just a big mind fuck. And trying to figure out how to just get through it is just ridiculous. It's a big game. Every part of it is
now,
a big game.
Is this the gentleman, I use that term loosely, who you had mentioned to me was involved with some disgusting incident with his stepdaughter, or is that somebody else?
No, this is Rick Strawn. He basically, he owns a big escort service, not the kind that you're thinking. It's the people that come and kidnap your child, basically. He's a former Atlanta police officer who started basically making money off of this kidnapping business, basically. He'd get about $1,800 for each kid, and he'd come with his wife or his daughter, or I guess stepdaughter, and would, like a team, they'd come get the kid, and they'd, you know, have handcuffs if needed, if the kid didn't comply, and they'd, you know, escort them to whatever program they were going to. I read into this guy. He was actually, his marriage broke up because he was an alcoholic, funny enough. He's trying to save these troubled teens when he's as fucked up as any of them. And he molested his stepdaughter. So that's awesome. I'm glad that parents are having a registered sex offender come and pick up their children. And who's to say he didn't mess with any of the kids he took away? You know, I don't know. Wouldn't be surprised.
So he's making a ton of money by being part of this kidnapping business.
Yes. And
legal
now I don't
kidnapping.
Doing it anymore. But there's other agencies out there that are. So, yeah, people are making money off of kidnapping children, and
now,
the parents are paying for it.
You've theorized to me, and I guess you don't have any evidence for this, but that perhaps some people who are referring children to this program are also getting a cut? You think that this might be the case?
I don't have exact evidence of this, like you said, but I spoke with a girl today that was in the program that said she was at a like psych facility before she got sent to Cross Creek, and they basically had a whole seminar in the psych facility on WASP programs. So they're definitely getting into these different facilities some way, because how would this psych facility know about WASP and have all these pamphlets and information? I wouldn't be surprised, because the two counselors that I was seeing recommended WASP, and why wouldn't they say, hey, Maybe your child should, I don't know, go to this place or that place, or maybe they should do further therapy. Maybe we should try and get to the root of these issues. But no, it was, you need to send your child away because she is going to die. She is, they love to use this term, she is an at-risk youth, which means, you know, I'll be dead in jail or a prostitute, one of those.
Well, doctors make a lot of money off of prescribing different medications and using the same kind of fear tactics. Oh, if you don't go along with this prescribed method, you know, it's really, you're taking your life into your own hands.
You
know, I'm a doctor here. I'm the authority. And so when these guidance counselors or whoever is saying your child is at risk, they need this kind of structure in their lives. It's, you know, parents are I guess, really feeling so helpless and worried that they would be, you know, willing to send their children off for a year and pay an extreme amount for this. And it seems like a big multi-level marketing type of recruiting scheme to get people in here working for it, whether it's people who have been through the program before and who are getting paid to shill for it, or people who are getting a cut for every new person admitted. I'm guessing that they have some incentive programs in place when so much money is being made.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's just sad to me that parents are basically giving up their parental, you know, duties and saying, oh, this doctor over here, he's an expert. He knows my child better than I do. What? No, you gave birth to this child. You've raised this child. You know that child more than any doctor blah, blah, blah who speaks to your kid for 15 minutes and says, oh, yeah, you need to be on Seroquel. They don't know your child. And that's sad to me that parents are, you know, they're not trusting their own instincts, you know, and relying on some quote-unquote expert who usually ends up harming the child more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Sinead, we've got a lot to go through tonight. I know you have a lot of notes on this topic. I've got some things to say as well. One of the things you sent me was a clip from the Dr. Drew show. And I think we should go to that because I think it's fairly interesting and shows exactly what we're talking about and how people are being convinced they're putting a lot of pressure on parents to send their children away. And when it's got a doctor doing the recommending, it's just all that more powerful. So here's a clip from the Dr. Drew show right here.
Is there something you want to tell these folks?
Well, there's no question Alante is involved in some behaviors that are scary. And I don't think that he wants to go down the path where that's going to lead. At Diamond Ranch Academy, we specialize in helping teenagers and their families, teenagers struggling with some of the same issues that we've been talking about here. And I really see a lot of hope. I see a young man who's already getting good grades, wants to achieve, he has goals for his life, wants to be an engineer. And I see a mom who's so committed to this young man, she's willing to do almost anything to save him. I think we can help. So we are prepared today to offer you a life-changing opportunity. We would like to give you free tuition to our academy.
Or a year?
A year.
Therapeutic environment with comprehensive social, psychiatric, psychological, and educational services.
I'm willing to do it if y'all give me a chance. This is all new to us.
Right.
What's happened today has all been new to us. Me publicizing him like that has all been new. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to do it if I don't see a change in the next couple months.
Right.
All I'm asking for is just like y'all saying, it takes time. This is new to him, and it takes time.
But let me just say, Mom, to me, and to I'm sure people watching at home, this is shocking.
Yes, it is.
It's shocking that you won't do this. I mean, it's a doctor recommending it. It's a free service. It's specifically what kids like him need. You have professionals that deal specifically with kids like this. I understand it's hard, but I deal with this all the time where people come to me and go, I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to do anything. I go, here is exactly what you need to do. And they go, okay, anything but that. Anything but that. So, I'm not making this recommendation casually. This is years of experience of dealing with people with behavioral problems. I see it all the time. And, you know, it's your call. You're the mom. But it kind of breaks my heart.
Well,
really.
We want you to make a decision you feel comfortable with, because what we know is that if you're not engaged in the process, it's not going to work.
Exactly.
We need your support to make this work. But I can also tell you that the thousands of parents we've talked to, we've been in business for over 12 years, and the thousands of parents we talk to, this story is what we hear. He fits the exact criteria for the type of student we work with. And parents all the time will make excuses. They put it off. I have parents that will call me and then say, okay, we're not quite ready. They call back 6 months later, okay, we're not quite ready. All the while it's sliding downward. So I would say to you, if things were getting better, and if you were coming on the show saying, we tried this intervention and it's really working and we're making progress, I would say, we look at that. But what I'm hearing is that things are continuing to slide down, and I think early intervention is the key. If you call us 6 months from now and he's done six more things, it's going to be that much harder for us
to
get the change.
We're not allowed six more things. That's what, I mean, if I let you go, do you feel like I'm walking away from you? Okay, then. That's it right there. It's nothing to talk about. I'm typing up a contract now to...
All right. So, coming back from that clip there, the woman actually did not want to let her son go because he felt like she would be abandoning him. And, yeah, this was much to the chagrin and surprise of Dr. Drew and the other representative from that WASP program. And, wow, that Dr. Drew, he sure is persuasive. He's a guy from Loveline and Celebrity Rehab. So, you know, he's really a person to trust with your child, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It was really interesting to see his reaction when that woman was hesitating to take him up on the offer. It's a free program to help out your child. Why wouldn't you go? The doctors are ordering it. It's doctor's order.
Yeah. I mean, that mom knew that something shady was going on. She's probably sensed it.
Mm-hmm. Sinead, you have you've talked about how some of these programs have changed their names. It reminds me of Blackwater, who, because of all the bad publicity, changed their name to She, and then there's something else. And they're probably even something else now as well. This is what a lot of shady businesses do, ones that are really harming the public interest, not helping it, having fraudulent practices. They need to continuously rebrand themselves. Amway would be another good example of a company that has gone about rebranding itself to avoid the bad press that they've gotten over the years. Now, do you have any idea how many of these programs are running in the United States right now and how many are affiliated with WASP?
I'm sure just as many as before. They've just changed names. There's actually a map that someone put up. I'll try and post it later, of all the programs in the United States, and it is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. And a lot of them still are associated with this WASP program, although a lot of their facilities were shut down. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And now, like I said, they're changing their name to Youth Foundation Incorporated. And I'm sure a multitude of other different names. But, yeah, it's still going on.
Sinead, I know you have a lot of things you want to get into here, but I've got a couple callers that have been waiting
awesome.
For a little while. So you want to go to the board and see what they have to say. Again, callers,
definitely.
Let's keep it to the topic at hand tonight and not other issues that are going on at Renegade Broadcasting right now. We've got 724. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm totally familiar with those type of programs firsthand because I was in those type of programs when I was young, have to go out the door, say, coming in the door, you're going out. And basically what it was everybody, just like she said, it was all chaos. Everybody basically were snitches because you had to tell on your fellow person to get out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You couldn't just stay there and just sit there in jail and just mind your own business and just do your time and leave. you had to basically police your other people in there. So these guys were always conflicting, and there were other guys that would probably try to be like the staff members. Those places were crazy to me. I know exactly what she's talking about. I was in there those things for years. I was in foster homes when the father got the stepdaughter pregnant, something like you got, like she was talking about earlier. So I know about these things firsthand, for sure.
What program were you in? Just out of curiosity.
I was in a program called Adelphi Village.
Okay.
And I was in a couple programs. There was a couple more. I'm 36 years old now, so I was in my teens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
15, 16. But I was in out of them basically my whole teenage years. I probably went in sixth grade. They didn't probably let me out until about a couple months till my 18th birthday.
Wow.
But I can say the only thing that really I got out of it that really doesn't really matter was a semi-alright education, because I know that was like one of the criteria you had to do to get out was to have good grades. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know the slang, you faked it until you made it, you did all that type of stuff. But that's basically the only thing I got out of it. Really, it did nothing for me, but basically almost make me antisocial, because you didn't know who to trust. You didn't know who to tell your feelings to,
right,
because that person could go back and tell on you.
Exactly, yeah.
That's basically all I say. That's it. Good show, guys.
Hey, thank you so much for sharing. Appreciate the call.
Mm-hmm.
So another call drop off the line. If they want to call back in, please do so. Sinead, it seems like although people might have at one time gotten a decent education out of these programs, that might no longer be the case. I think perhaps the education is too much of a cost right now.
Oh, my God, it was
and,
a joke. It was a joke.
They cut back on it. Let's hear about that. And also, it seems they made even more recent cuts since you've been there.
Yeah, I was actually reading today that the students at Cross Creek, which is still open, they only go to school every other day. So that's awesome. School was a joke. I think I kind of covered this last time that, you know, there was ages 12 to about 18 in my group, which we called our family. And so we were all taught in one little schoolroom with one, I'm not even going to call them a teacher, I'm just going to call them a body, because they just sat there.
A proctor, perhaps?
Yeah, exactly. It was like a big detention. Who sat there, and basically all they did was grade your tests. Now, what you were given a textbook, you know, say it's history time, given a history textbook, which was probably like 100 years old, you know, falling apart, and you would go up to the desks. There's a little section where you take tests, and basically you had as many tries as you needed to pass the test. So there's not any real learning involved. You're just trying to remember the answer so you can get the points to then advance to the next level. So there was no real learning. There's huge gaps in my education. When I was released from the program and I was back in normal school, I was way behind, and it was embarrassing.
They're making everything like this in public schools now with a standardized test where it's all teaching to universal tests and
right.
No real learning is going on. I think that they're trying to actually spread out this type of mentality to the public systems as well, and that's why we're going to see more and more armed guards, not necessarily to keep people out, but also to keep students in.
Yeah.
It's very scary to see what's happening to youth these days, and that's just even talking about the, quote, normal, unquote, youth. Hey,
yeah, I know.
Sinead,
go ahead.
I know that there's some kind of cross promotion with other programs in there, and you were dealing with a lot of self-help type books and different kinds of gurus who wanted to show you the path, wanted to show you the way toward enlightenment, toward progress, towards changing yourself for the better. You know, looking within and. Obviously, it's none of these. They're breaking you down and trying to enforce their way of thinking upon you. But do you have anything to relate in terms of that type of material about, you know, self-help and things like that?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's just funny looking back on it now. It's so ridiculous. basically during all of our meals except for the weekend, because that was like special time, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, we'd have to listen to these tapes where nobody could talk. You had to listen to the tapes, and we would listen to, what's that guy, Deepak Chopra? Get to listen to him. God, there were some others. I think some Tony Robinson or Robbins. There was this video that they would make us watch called The Price Tag of Sex, which basically, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's like, if you have sex, you're going to get AIDS, you're going to get STDs, you're going to get pregnant, it's going to be awful.
They should show you the movie Kids.
That would be total contraband. Yeah, I've seen that film. It's disturbing.
That's the mind controlling there as well. Sinead, the reason I ask is somebody had actually uploaded a short clip of George Carlin talking about self-help books. I don't think it was done for this show, but it could be relevant if you just want to take a minute-long break
for sure.
Here.
Sounds good.
All right, here's George Carlin.
Now, something else a lot of you are aware of, those of you with illegal cable hookups will be aware of the fact that one of the things I like to do in my shows is complain, you know? It's kind of a motif for me, complaining. And, of course, this weird culture we live in leaves you no shortage of things to complain about. So this next piece of material, like most good ideas, is fairly simple. It's just a list of people who ought to be killed. Starting with these people who read self-help books. Why do so many people need help? Life is not that complicated. You get up, you go to work, you eat three meals, you take one good shit, and you go back to bed. What's the fucking mystery? And the part I really don't understand, if you're looking for self-help, why would you read a book written by somebody else? That's not self-help, that's help. There's no such thing as self-help. If you did it yourself, you didn't need help. You did it yourself. Try to pay attention to the language we've all agreed on.
You're toxic, Sinead. Let me help you. Help me help you. We're
going
to show you the way to be clean and sober and not have dirty, naughty thoughts. And, you don't want to be a whore, Sinead.
They convinced me that I had a sex addiction, and I was like 14. I probably had sex like I could count it on my fingers, you know. And they were like, "You have a sex addiction." And then you know, I would have to write to my parents and be like, "I need this book, I need that book," and then the parents would send all these self-help books.
Well,
I still have a bunch
to,
of them.
Well, it does seem that 14. Would be a young age to have sex with people that, even if you're counting them just on one hand, I think that
has
decreased quite a bit. And, you know, it's, I think, a shame that people are being sexualized at such an early age. But you got to look at the media that's being put out. You mentioned before that you were in these programs with some relatives of celebrities and celebrities themselves, somebody who was working with Disney before and after. And this is the same kind of culture that you see Miley Cyrus dancing around and doing like a stripper dance in the pole back when she was 15, and her and her sister doing the hoedown, throwdown. You've got the same people benefiting off of the degenerate music and then also the troubled teen industry that results by these young people trying to be cool by emulating their favorite superstars. And a good example of how this is done is Mitt Romney's Clear Channel. You know, if you look at his connections to Bain, Clear Channel, which is broadcasting at almost all the radio stations. You can hear Rihanna and Britney singing about S&M, you know, that whips and chains excite them, sex in the air, I don't care. All the other crap that's out there that I usually just have to turn off. Coming through Clear Channel. And then, as you've shown, Mitt Romney directly connected to the Mormon establishment that is behind WASP. Directly connected. And it's just one more example how they really are messing with the minds of people by
showing them one thing as being really cool and hip, and then on the other hand saying, thou shall not. It's kind of going back.
I mean, at 14, how did I know to do these things even? Like, why were these ideas even in my head? And just real quick, Kyle, I wanted to mention before I forget, you know how we talked about Aaron and Nick Carter's sister was in the program? Well, after she got out, she overdosed and she's now dead.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like this is somewhat religiously motivated. We talked about the Mormon connections, but they're trying to save people, save them from themselves, save them from the evils of the world. I think one of these guys even said that his mission was motivated by God, that he's trying to do basically God's work. And
right.
You look at the way that you've been forced to confess your sins in front of other people and talk about all of your deepest, dirtiest secrets in the open, it reminds me of confessional as well in the church, where then for whatever you've done wrong, you have to say however many Hail Marys and Our Fathers.
Right, right. And that could be like however many essays you have to write or however many, you know, tape credits, which I guess I could explain that.
Sure.
So, yeah, like if you ever get in trouble, you're sent to, like big trouble, like, you know, you try to run or, I don't know, it could be any reason, really. You get sent to what's called worksheets where, say, I've attained, you know, level 3, I automatically drop all the way back to the beginning and all of my possessions that I've acquired, you know, maybe I'm able to wear a bracelet. All that's taken away. I'm given my orange uniform again, which looks a lot like a jumpsuit. And you're basically forced to be on silence from everybody. You're not allowed to talk to anybody, not allowed to look at anybody in the eyes. If you laugh at anything that they're doing, you get in trouble. You're only allowed to talk about food, bathroom, water, or meds. Those are the only things you can ask for. You're taken out of school. You're not allowed to go to school. And basically, we're all put in this room where we listen to these books on tape and have to fill in little bubbles, much, you know, similar to a standardized test. And then you are checked on these answers, and then you acquire points to just get out of worksheets. And these aren't points because you're back down to level 1, so you're not even, you know, attaining points to get to the next level. There could be like 1,000 credits. It could be, they could just say 5,000 tape credits and you're in there for weeks. So it's a game within a game.
Well, yeah, you're prescribed some work, just some mindless work. You mentioned to me also that sometimes the answers were wrong, but you had to fill in the wrong answers anyways, just because that's the way that they grade them.
Yeah, and things were misspelled. I mean, it was a joke. It was a joke. So if you were in there a lot, you kind of caught on to like, oh, okay, this answer's wrong, but I have to fill in the wrong bubble to get out of here. But you couldn't dare correct them on that.
Right, of course. Now, moving on to a slightly different topic here, you've mentioned to me these seminars, I guess they're called, that are a fairly important part of your time there. Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. It's basically what your whole program advancement revolves around. So these series of seminars are called TASKS, seminars, T-A-S-K-S, which I think they do even maybe for some, like, corporate seminars as well. I think it's spreading. But let's see, I wrote it down. There's when you first come in, there's orientation, and then there's discovery. The next, and you have to pass all these seminars to get to the next one. Then there's focus, and then there's keys, and there's also parent-child seminars 1 through 3. So basically you do these seminars with your parents after you've attained a certain level. These seminars were extremely disturbing. We were put in high-stress situations where we basically had to sit around, like you said, and divulge personal information. And if you didn't cry or get angry or show emotion, then you weren't sharing enough, and you would be kicked out of seminar, which they called choosing out. It was ridiculous. And we were separated, the boys and girls, for the whole time except for when you're in seminar. So that was really weird, having to, you know, you haven't spoken to a boy in months, and then you have to sit in front of them and basically cry and scream and tell all of these horrible things that have happened to you.
Now, do you remember the seminars you went through? can you relate any of your own personal experiences? And if not, what other people have said of these?
Yeah, my memory is kind of foggy because I was really medicated while I was there, but we had to do some weird exercises. Like there was one where I think it was in Focus where we came into the room. They'd always play this really weird music, and there was no light allowed. Like all the windows were taped shut, and everything was always dark. We came in, the lights were dimmed, and they had towels rolled up with duct tape around them. And we were told that we had to, like, hit the towel against the wall and hit it against the floor and get all of our rage and anger out. And, like, even if you weren't angry, you know, like, and sure, we had a lot of anger, but I didn't want to, like, throw a towel against the wall. That's so stupid. And we were forced to do that to exhaustion. I mean, like, snot is pouring out of people's noses. People's eyes are, like, bulging out. We had to do it for a while. And if you weren't really going at it, then you weren't divulging enough.
Yep. That's very interesting. Somebody in the chat room, Truck Nuts, saying, can you say re-education camp? Yep. And what are we told is about the evil North Koreans who have their re-education camps. And everybody else always is doing all these terrible things, but no way could it possibly be happening right here in the United States. Actually, you had sent me someone's little essay here on these seminars, and actually, she might be calling in during the second hour.
Yeah, I hope she does, because she really is well researched and remembers a lot more than I do.
All right, so and of course, the reason that you can't remember a lot of this is because you were doped up beyond belief.
Yeah, antipsychotic.
Can you describe a little bit about what that was like before I get into reading this essay here?
It was insane. They put me, I think I might have talked about this before, they put me on a mood stabilizer called Lamictal, which I don't even think it's a mood stabilizer. I think it's for, like, I don't know, like migraines or something. I don't even know. But it made me develop a muscle tic that was uncontrollable, where basically I'd blink my eyes really hard, which I still kind of do, or I'd twitch different muscles. So I was sent to a physician's assistant, not even a psychiatrist, because he came once a month, who then put me on Geodone, which is a tranquilizer. So they didn't say, oh, you're having these muscle tics, let's take you off of the meds because that may be causing it. He was like, oh, no, let's put you on a tranquilizer on top of the meds. I couldn't stay awake. I would have random outbursts where I'd just scream uncontrollably, like, I couldn't even control it. I'd fall asleep during school. When I was on Seroquel, too, people would call my name, and I could almost feel the sound waves going through me. That's how highly sensitive I was. It was just awful. I just felt miserable, miserable, and there was nobody I could talk to get me off these meds.
Well, you had a problem. You were taking drugs, Sinead. You were toxic. And they
so, yeah, let's
clean
put me on some
out.
More drugs.
They needed to clean you out and show you the way to happiness, to mood stabilization, to being, you know, a productive part of this society.
Yeah, being productive, sitting there
yourself,
drooling.
You know? All right, I'm gonna go through this essay here, and this is by Mayla Atkinson.
I believe it's Mayla.
It's called Mayla, and it's called Intense Intimidation, Confusion, and Terror. And excuse me if my reading is not the best, but this is the first time actually reading this. Before even setting foot inside the first seminar, the child has already witnessed the effects of seminar for a full week. The most alarming aspect was the screaming. The dining hall was positioned just next to the seminar room, so plenty of noise could be heard almost every meal. Some classrooms and the isolation rooms were above the seminar room. These were also full of noise from the seminar. Loud, disruptive music was also common, as was hearing the facilitator screaming at a particular child. The child would witness other children, perhaps their friends, entering the room, hear intimidation and wailing from torture, and thus be intimidated, and half the work breaking their spirit was done before they ever set foot in the seminar. Oh, I didn't read that correctly, but yes, they were just breaking the spirit of these children by allowing them to hear what was going on and getting them to anticipate, worry about what would be happening. That's my own commentary. Girls who chose out inevitably cried and came back looking quite disheveled. Chose out was put in parentheses there because it was their choice. Russian interrogators knew simply the implication of torture or seeing one's compatriots return injured from interrogation made perhaps 30% confess. Both often played on the affections for loved ones. Night was often used by the Russian Gulag to extract confessions, and WASP used night to its advantage in seminars especially. These ran late into the night, often until 11 p.m., followed by hours of homework and early morning rising, the most profound impact being serious sleep deprivation. Children, physicians recommend 8 to 10 hours of sleep for adolescents, but during seminar, our already meager 7 hours of sleep was reduced to much less, sometimes 4 hours or less per night. Sleep deprivation makes critical thinking difficult or impossible, so the teen is left very vulnerable to giving up or changing core beliefs to match that WASP teaches. To match what WASP teaches. The facilitator was a particularly cruel and unempathetic tormentor, akin to the interrogator in the Gulag. He employed many psychological interrogation methods, especially psychological contrast. One minute he was speaking in a friendly, sympathetic tone with an appealing face. The next minute he was screaming, arms raised aggressively in the child's face. He would often use foul language. He was allowed to lie and often did, sometimes creating elaborate untrue scenarios to confuse and dismay the children. During seminar in WASP, they regularly denied the children water bottles, limiting water intake to 4 short breaks, even in sweltering summer conditions. Gulag likewise deprived a person of water during interrogation. Both policies resulted in dehydration, muddied thinking, and an increased susceptibility to the mind control. Music was used to install fear and induce compliance. Specifically, the theme to 2001, A Space Odyssey, was played whenever anyone had to sit down. I've played that in this show, as an aside. Often, there would be tricks. Not enough time to get to your seat, not enough chairs, last-minute instructions that were hard to comply with. The intent was to single out the slowest, least interested child to choose out. There was always punishment for choosing out, usually at least another month of time at the facility. The fear of choosing out was in everyone. The child who chose out would have to write an essay on why she was accountable for leaving the seminar early, what she would do differently to not choose out in the future, often 5 or 10 pages front and back, margin to margin. Sometimes she might lose her level or the future, often 5 or 10, there's a lot of text here, or the confidence of the group in her sincerity, all because of how well she performed such trivial tasks and tests. The effect was to put the child on edge all the time, wearing her down much quicker by constant fear of making trivial mistakes. Humiliation was a common event in seminar. Slut-shaming was rampant, and the girls who had sex were particularly humiliated. Sometimes they were asked to dress slutty and put on dance performances for crowds of cheering or jeering peers and staff. Wow. Children were encouraged to share personal, intimate details about their lives with dozens of strangers. Girls who had been sexually abused were especially humiliated for it. Although blame was an unacceptable idea, the idea of accountability was redefined to encompass blame and define the responsible party, the child, in all circumstances. They taught even a woman raped at gunpoint had chose her rape over being shot. Therefore, she was accountable, responsible, at fault, could have chose differently. That is the end of what I was sent here. That last paragraph is amazing. That's incredible, if that is true.
Yeah, just to add something real quick, there was also these things called processes that your therapist would put you on. And any girl that had an abortion was forced to carry around a 5-pound bag of flour and treat it like a baby, sometimes even put a picture of a baby's face on it, and they had to carry that around.
So this is, I don't even know how to describe it, but women who have been raped are being sent to these facilities because they're unable to deal with the stress that this has put on them, or people just want them to shut up about it. Perhaps they were raped by one of the people who's sending them there.
Yep.
And yet they're shamed about it. They are made to feel guilty for their rape. This is terrible.
Yeah, they would even have girls reenact rape scenarios in front of groups, like in group therapy.
Wow.
Awesome. That's so therapeutic, right?
And this is all legal. It's being done with government approval.
Yep.
This is...
And also a lot of kids that would have been going to jail, the state is funding them for them to go to these programs. Because, that's the better alternative.
Them.
Yeah, I would much rather have gone to juvenile. Like, even if it was for the same amount of time, I would pick that over the program any day.
Wow. So, because a lot of parents these days can't really afford these WASP programs, it's nice of the state to step up and sponsor these children to go. So the taxpayer gets to fund the imprisonment of our youth as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not just imprisonment. That's bad enough. That's one thing. But you mentioned you just got to wait out your time in there, and it's usually not all that much. With these programs, it is a mind fuck. And you have no idea when you're getting out.
Yep. Yep. Sucks.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. All right. There's a caller on the line. Let's go to this and see who this is. I think it might be a James. James, are you there?
Yeah, this is James. I read a book
How
a few years ago. I'm doing well. It's great to hear you both back on the air talking about this again. I read a book a few years ago about this, written by a younger woman. It was about her experience in one of these programs, and it might have even been Cross Creek. Sinead, do you know of any book like that?
You know what? I've been looking into a few, but I'm not too familiar. But, it very well could be, and if not, it's probably a similar experience.
I can't remember the name, her name or the title. Something, I think it had crazy in the title.
Okay.
And her name started with an A or something like that.
Okay.
But, yeah, it sounded really similar to what, even down to the bag of flour, that sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
You said you're looking into other books, but do you have any titles you could throw out there?
There's one that I was looking into. It was called, something exposing the troubled teen industry or something like that. I need to double check.
Shanae, what was the name of the video you sent me over the GW, which I think is freely available?
Oh, yeah. Nick Gaglia actually made a film called Over the GW, which goes into the straight ink, like the scared straight, which was, another form of Synanon that kind of changed names. I think it's actually a pretty good film that he, did himself, and it really portrays what things were like in there if anybody wants to kind of check it out. There's also another one, I need to remember the name, but it was about a boy that was sent to a similar program, but it was more wilderness-based, and he died of exhaustion. I think he was probably 14, and he died.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That book that I read came to me because somebody found it in a dumpster at a bookstore.
Wow.
And I'd never heard of that stuff before, but it didn't really surprise me because I had been looking into behavior modification and things like that, but I just, the extent of it is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, well, if you remember the title, it's been posted, that'd be awesome.
I'll try and dig it up, sure.
That's incredibly telling that it was in a dumpster at a bookstore. Was that because... nobody wanted it, or was it because they're trying to get this type of thing hidden from public view?
Yeah, I think a lot
I'm
of people are
the
choosing
latter.
Not. I think a lot of people are choosing not to acknowledge that this is going on right in front of them. They'd rather just kind of look away. How could that happen in America? I mean, but it's happening here, I'd say, more than anywhere.
Yeah, well, it's hard to know what's going on in other countries when you barely know what's going on in yours. So all these lies about what's going on in these other countries and how terribly they treat their people very well could be not the case.
Yeah,
but,
it wouldn't be
we've been given a very sugar-coated version of what's going on here in the United States. But when you start digging into this layer cake or peeling back the onion, you see it's rotten at the core.
Yeah.
James, any other thoughts that you had for the topic this evening?
Not right away. Nope. Thanks, Kyle.
Well, I'll keep you on the line and just say something somehow if you want to come back on the air. Send a message in the chat or something, which is over at renegadebroadcasting.com. Okay?
Thanks again.
Well, thanks for the call. Sinead, 1 minute song here, 1.5, and then we'll be right back. Okay. Oh, wow. Sorry. I was muted there.
Yeah.
I was getting very philosophical talking about raising children in the kindergarten, the children's garden, as kindergarten means in German, and it was all muted. And sorry about that, folks. Just one of the other technical issues that has gone on here, but that was my fault this time, so I apologize. Sinead, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, there was something you sent me that was pretty interesting. It connects to the seminars that we were just talking about. Something about this Discovery seminar. That's one of the ones that you went through, was called Discovery. Is that correct?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And what did you find that connects to our friends in Judaism?
I was just kind of Googling Discovery seminars, and this one came up that's called Discovery, and it's I'll read a little bit of it. It says, each year close to 10,000 people experience the thrill of Aisha Torah's Discovery Seminar. With its crisp, entertaining style and state-of-the-art educational techniques, Discovery packs the wisdom and relevance of Jewish values and ideas into a spectacular and moving demonstration of the case for Judaism. It goes on a little bit. Let's see. A variety of original workshops round out the seminar, exploding the myth that Judaism is anti-pleasure and teaching participants how to take advantage of Judaism's insights for personal enrichment. I think that pretty much sums it up. Just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, so there's no direct connection between these. But I wouldn't be surprised if it ties into, who knows, maybe even the Discovery Channel. It seems like they have their tentacles in everything. So the Discovery Seminar is a thing to promote Judaism, it seems, and also incorporated into these programs, perhaps, in some way or another. I do think that they take these templates and apply them to all different schemes, let's say. We'll apply it for businesses, for different workshops, for marriage counseling, for all these different things where they tell people, oh, you're unhealthy, there's something wrong with you and we can fix it. You've just got to basically, you know, go along with our plan. Follow this path and you will know the way.
And pay us.
Yeah, and give us a lot of money.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I mean, they create the problem and then they have the solution right there. Brilliant.
So, were there any other particular things about these institutions that you think people out there would be surprised by, shocked by, in terms of just perversity or general lack of empathy, let's say?
I mean, pretty much covered all the crazy stuff. I'm sure there's more. It's just hard to remember.
You mentioned just the posturing by some of these people you'd be interacting with, these authority figures.
Oh, God. Yeah. I was sent to see an additional therapist. I had my regular therapist who I think was a social worker, and then I was also sent to go see Dr. Seeley, who I've reached out to some other people that were in the program and then had to see him, and they all agree that he was extremely creepy. His office was really small, so basically, you know, he's facing me in a chair. My knees are almost touching him, and, I mean, I can't really show everybody, but he would basically sit with his legs wide open, having his crotch just completely hanging out there, and it creeped everybody out. And, of course, we would never talk about this during the program because someone might hear or we'd get in trouble. But now hearing people say the same thing, I mean, it was really creepy. And he was a creepy, creepy, creepy man, another Mormon.
And they were given complete, unchecked authority
like
to do whatever they pleased.
Yeah. But then once I left the room, I would be watched, you know, everything I do. But with him, he was trusted.
These predators have preyed upon young, troubled youth for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
They want them to be lost, wandering around, so that they can show them the way, show them the path, and then it doesn't lead anywhere. It doesn't lead anywhere good, at least. It leads you around in circles, spiraling around and dizzy.
Or to insanity.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting towards. we've got another call here, and one more time, the call number is 347-633-9657. I'm not sure who this is or where they're calling from, but caller, you're on the air.
Well, hi, this is Salahuddin from New York City.
What was your name? One more time, please.
Yeah, you can call me Sal. Sal.
All right, Sal.
Yeah. No, I empathize with what she was saying about, you know, the psychiatry movement. It was used in the Soviet Union to control populations. It's actually an anti-psychiatry movement, you know, the mental health industry. They tend to be dictatorial. They like to medicate. Of course, social workers, you know, they pretty much do the talk therapy. Psychologists do most of the testing, psychological testing, and psychiatrists pretty much just dispense psychotropic meds. But, you know, it is. She knows, you know, it's like an organization called Recovery Incorporated for people who had the experience of having been on the couch, so to speak, and how that it can in itself can be somewhat traumatic. You know, maybe you heard of Thomas Jarge. He wrote a book called The Myth of Mental Illness. John Breeding he's a psychologist who's a part of the anti-psychiatry movement. It's about population control, a lot of it. You know, they could arbitrarily just, some people think, like, if you've been accused of a crime and you've been declared insane and you're put away in some state hospital, that's an indefinite, some people would probably opt to do their time in a state prison than a state mental health hospital.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those places are like a snake pits. I'm sure she's familiar with that.
I mean, you'd be treated better in a state prison.
Yeah. You have no rights.
That's something, you
know?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, I'm listening. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, it's terrible, you know, the psyche. And not only that, but a lot of the treatment modalities, you know, psychodynamic theory, you know, has been, a lot of it, you know, has been deemed to be pessimistic. It was largely very sexist, Freudian, you know, penis envy and such. A lot of the theories are really cornball, you know, and really are not verifiable. You know, it's just very speculative. You know, so, you know, you could go see a psychotherapist, she was saying, who's really a crackpot. But
oh, yeah, and this guy totally was. He had me take the MMPI. I don't know if you're familiar with that test. It's like
Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. A thousand questions, right?
Yeah. And I took it 3 times because they didn't understand my results. Because, of course, the questions are so stupid. They're like, are you angry? You know, yeah, I'm fucking angry. And then the next day, yeah, I'm not that angry. So, of course, my results are going to be different. I was diagnosed with ADHD, bipolar, borderline personality disorder, anxiety disorder. So, oh, okay, now you have this diagnosis. Now let's go to the next level and put you on medication.
Hmm.
They start giving these tests to children at a very early age, sometimes modified versions, in school. Sometimes they say it's anonymous, that, oh, your answers aren't recorded as, you know, you individually. We're just trying to get a general picture of what your drug habits and sexual habits are and other ways that you feel about life. And I think that these are just all part of the process of getting people initiated into the psychotherapy process.
Definitely. I actually went on a job interview today, and my potential employer had me take a personality inventory from an Anthony Robbins site. And I was just like, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding me right now. Like, you can't escape it. It's everywhere.
That's just pop culture. The guy's not a licensed therapist. That's
oh,
absurd.
Yeah, exactly. And that determines my employment. That's
wow.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
A motivational speaker. You know, come on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, listen, you know, like you said, you know, I appreciate what you both were talking about, how, you know, we've really been, you know, deceived in our country. I look on the web, internet, about which countries have the highest indices of satisfaction with quality of life. It certainly isn't the United States, you know. It's, you know, maybe Sweden, Switzerland, Australia, some other countries. You know, you look at, you know, incarceration rates and substance abuse rates, divorce rates. You know, America's very high in those. You know, so yet we still, you know, American exceptionalism, we still want to claim being the very best country in the world. Well, we've got a military. It doesn't seem to be working in our for the benefit of the people. But
yeah,
you know, at least
here,
we're kicking ass all over the world.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and their suicide rates are worse than their casualty rates, not their casualty, their death rates. And I think it's something like 22 suicides a month these days, or a day.
I thought it was a day.
Could be.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Was it a day? That's the average. That's the average of veterans.
Wow.
I'm sorry, that would be veterans, not just active duty there. But active duty, that's a serious problem that they're trying to deal with right now. And this isn't always even guys who are deployed overseas. Sometimes it's people who are on the bases. But when you're dealing with the military indoctrination, it's a very similar system that is being employed in these youth boot camps, as they call them sometimes.
Well, you're nothing. You know, they break you down. I was in the military from 91 to 97, Army. station in Germany and in Turkey. I was satellite communications 31 Sierra. I was never deployed, very fortunate, right? Right after Desert Storm and, you know, well before, you know, 9/11. So, you know, I was, I guess you could say, fortunate. But, yeah, you know, they tear you down and build you up in their image, you know. So, yeah, it is, you know, like an indoctrination process where, you know, you see the film, you saw the film Full Metal Jacket. I love that movie.
Right.
You know, that boot camp scenes, man, really resonate with me, and that's pretty much what it's like. You know, it's sensory deprivation. You have no other input except that of the drill sergeant. You know, yours is not the reason why. Yours is but to do and die. And, you know, and to an extent, quite frankly, man, you know, I kind of welcomed the indoctrination at the time, and I look back on it, and I says, you know, what was I thinking? But, you know, that process can turn you into just that, an object of violence. And I was, you know, but, yeah, it's an indoctrination.
Yeah.
I think we strive to be good at what we do. And when we're rewarded for doing well, it feels good. And when we're part of something larger, I think that's and working towards some kind of common good, I think that sometimes we forget all the bad things that are happening along the way as well. And, you know, you just kind of buy into the lie that you're actually enjoying what you're doing and that this is right.
Yep.
Well, what do you both think about, you know, our intervention worldwide now, American imperialism? What do you both think about that?
It's similar to what's going on here. The U.S. is saying, we know what's best for you.
Hmm.
We're going to intervene, and we're gonna mess you all up inside and claim that it's what's right for you. That's what's good for you. It's an interesting metaphor there.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. You know, the irony is that, okay, what was it, the fall of the Soviet Union, the Berlin Wall was 89, 90, and 91, whatever it was. And, you know, we were told, well, now, you know, we're going to have world peace, you know. And and since then, we've had more wars, I think, than during the Cold War, you know. And, you know, so we, as you said, we were lied to, you know. They're doing pretty much the same kind of adventurism that, you know, we supposedly were fighting, you know, the Soviet Union, you know, and the Eastern Bloc countries to prevent. You know, I mean, think of the boondoggle, man, the Vietnam War, people who lost their limbs and, you know, died, you know, and now not only did we just leave, we didn't really lose the war, we left before, you know, we had to actually finish the job. Now, the Vietnam has, as a trade nation, has preferential status. So, I mean, and they're still supposedly communist, and China was still supposedly communist. So what are we fighting for? Or is it just like what Smedley Butler, is it the military-industrial complex? We just fought for the sake of fighting so that, you know, the Carlyle Group and Halliburton and the rest of those arms dealers can make billions of dollars.
Right.
Well, and then what happens afterwards, too, is that no one really picks up the tab for the permanent psychological damages that have happened to the people who participated in that. Or somebody who was in one of these programs. That's, you know, really a permanent psychological impairment that has been placed upon them. And, you know, that can't even be calculated.
It's messed people up more than they were when they first came in.
Exactly.
I feel like it's awful. People, I mean, like, I'm not trying to tell a sob story here, but I still have nightmares that I'm going to get sent back there. And I wake up and I'm just so glad that I'm not there. So, I mean, and I left years ago, so it stays with you for a while.
When you say you left, you mean the military or the...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about the program.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which
I'd say is pretty similar.
Which program?
Regards, but...
You mean it was a mental health facility? Or...
It was a behavior modification facility, I guess you could say.
Well, did they use aversive therapy? Was it aversive or...
Yeah, it was aversion therapy or aversive therapy and attack therapy.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, they say psychology 101, punishment is contraindicated with behavioral change. Punishment
yep.
is contraindicated. So, yeah, I mean, we're not rats in a maze, you know?
Right. Well, to some we are.
To some we are, yeah. That's how they treat us. Lemmings.
Yeah.
That's how they treat us.
Yeah.
It's the rat race for sure. Hey, Sal, I thank you very much for the call. We've got somebody on the line here. Actually, the person who wrote the essay I read before, and she has personal experience with this as well. Sal, any final thoughts you have before
I
bring on Mela?
No, it's been a pleasure to speak with the both of you. I look forward to talking with you both and hearing your show again. Have a wonderful evening.
Awesome. Thanks,
Sal. All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, I'm going to try to connect her through Skype and see if this will work. Hello. Hello, Mela.
Yes?
Hi.
Good. You can't hear me.
No, I can hear you.
You don't have to yell either.
Good.
Talk to me.
Hi.
Hi, are you able to hear us right? All right.
Yes.
All right. Sinead asked me to add you here because she said you have some experiences with, in particular, the WASP program, and have done some activism in terms of really getting the word out about what's going on there.
Yeah. I was in Cross Creek. From January 1999 until February of 2002. And some of that time was when I was under 18, and some of that time was after I was 18. I graduated the program and have been fighting them ever since, fighting them since before then. Actually, when I was in Utah at Cross Creek Manor, I read a book by Alexander Solzhenitsyn called Gulag Archipelago, and it talked about different kinds of torture, and that's when I started to learn that the things that were going on in Utah were some of the same techniques that I was reading about in that book. And that's when I started doing research and trying to figure out what was going on.
So it looks like communist-style gulags are being employed against the people of the United States, the adolescents. To get them to shape up, to get in line, as they say.
I see things in common with communist Russia in their interrogations of political prisoners. I see things in common with North Korea's treatment of POWs. A lot of brainwashing techniques that they learned from those kind of sources.
And in your fight against this group, what have been your biggest obstacles?
There's a lot of people that the FBI doesn't want to do anything about it. WASP will say, anytime a kid complains about abuse, WASP immediately says, oh, these kids are liars and manipulators. And that's a big issue that I face. When I first called the FBI when I got out, they were just not at all interested in pursuing the case, even though I asked to leave when I was 18 years old, not immediately when I turned 18, but I asked to leave actually about a week before they let me go. And they physically held me there and kept me there against my will. They wouldn't let me leave through the doors. There were locks on the doors. I couldn't go as I wanted to. So So when I left, I called the FBI because to me this is kidnapping. I'm over 18. I have no court order. They have no right to physically hold me there. And the FBI just had no interest in pursuing the case.
So what have been some of the successes that you've accomplished? Have you been able to get the word out to a large number of people, or is publicity really hard to come by on this issue?
We're successful enough at spreading the idea that WASP harms kids, that they are actually stopping using the WASP label, and they're moving on to teen rights, calling it teen revitalization, or different groups are separating themselves from WASP as more allegations of abuse are coming forward. We're actually seeing them change their tactics and their marketing style to try to distance themselves from the abuse, which I think is a sign that we're getting to them. Some programs have actually been closed as the stories about abuse come out. High Impact in Mexico was closed by the Mexican government because of severe abuse. Caused by the sea, also in Mexico, because of abuse. Tranquility Bay was closed. The program in Samoa, Paradise Cove, was closed. A lot of these places are getting closed down. There was a program that was trying to open in Nevada, and Nevada kicked them out, and they went to Utah and reopened in the same facility as Cross Creek Manor. These programs seem to be getting out of different states, and they seem to be congregating in the few places that will tolerate them. I think it's pretty telling that Mexico says you're abusing these kids too much. You can't be locking them in dog cages. You can't be exercising them for like 10 or 12 or 14 hours a day. And then they go to Utah and they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to continue these bad practices there without really any oversight or regulation.
Yeah, well, so where can people find your material online if they would like to look further into this topic?
There's a couple of different groups online. I have crosscreek.wasfn.org, but there's a Facebook group for survivors of WASP. And if you just Google WASP abuse or WASP survivors, there's a lot of different groups that are available that do this.
Telling parents about
what's going on and for helping kids that went through the place.
When you say survivors, some people might think that's being a bit dramatic, reactionary, it couldn't have been that bad. Now, are there any statistics as to how well these people have done later in their lives after getting out of this program?
There are not really any good statistics. WASP doesn't keep track of kids after more than, like, maximum of a year after they get out. I've kept track of my friends on Facebook, but all I have is anecdotal evidence of kids that did poorly after that.
So surviving this program, as some people actually don't survive it literally, they have died in these various programs. Surviving the program doesn't mean that you're going to be flourishing afterwards. Now, they'll probably say, "Oh, they didn't have a very good future to begin with. That's why they were sent here." But it seems like this kind of traumatic experience has been really screwing up the heads of a lot of young people, and it's very hard to get straight after that.
Yeah, a lot of people, teenagers, when they get out of the place, go through a phase where they are really out of control and destructive, just trying to cope with the reality of the mind control that went on there. I really don't think survivor is an exaggeration. Although people tell me WASP wants to make it out like this is a really helpful place, and they lie a lot. They lie to parents, they lie to us kids when we were there. It has taken a long time for me to come to terms with what happened to me there and what I saw happen to my friends. It was a very scary place.
Well, I've been asking you all the questions, but Sinead is the one who's actually been through this experience. So, Sinead, are there any things that you'd like to ask Mayla or talk about with her?
Hey, Mayla, I'm so glad you came on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. I just think it's interesting that you actually were able to get a hold of that book, because I remember our quote-unquote library. If you picked up a book, there would usually be black Sharpie marker. This is ridiculous now thinking back on it. There would be blacking out paragraphs of things that you weren't allowed to read.
Oh, good Lord. Wow.
Do you remember that?
What were you there
for? I got that when I was 14 there till I was about 17. It wasn't 3 years. I was only there for like 20 months. I honestly don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I was in, I don't know if you're familiar with Ron June. He was one of the, like, scary therapists.
How many Rons did you have?
Yeah, I was aware of Ron June. I counted myself really lucky that I didn't have him as my therapist.
Everybody did.
He handled the upper-level girls while I was there mostly, and he played a lot of mind games. I remember girls from Ron June's group who were... There was this basketball thing he would do, and they were always concerned whether they would beat him at basketball or not beat him at basketball. Like,
they never knew
instead of therapy, he would take girls out and play basketball with them.
It was called Ron June Ball.
I had Norm at the high-level facility. Norm Tidebald, I think, was his last name.
Yeah.
And we called him Stormin' Norman the Mormon. And he wasn't one of the worst therapists. Actually, the one I had that was the worst was Brian Hansen when I was on the lower level. He was the one...
He was really short, right? He was really short?
No, he was really tall and really lanky.
Okay, now I know who you're talking about. And he had
the group that had most of the girls who had been molested or abused. Mm-hmm. And he did some really, really unbelievably wrong things to those girls. Things that I didn't realize, that I didn't know what was going on then. For instance, the girls who had been raped or molested, they like to put on a play where the girl, like a reenactment of the event, and they would go over what happened before, during, and after the girl raped. They would put on a, sometimes the girl would play herself, and sometimes she would watch one of her friends play her, and they would pick the staff that looked most like her rapist. And they would have the lights down and the music playing in the background, and Brian would get on the microphone, and they would go through scenes in what had happened in her life. And he would say things like, "Don't you wish you could have turned away right now?" Or things that made it seem like it was her fault that she had been raped. And just over and over for more than an hour. And they would actually have, it was like he was dry humping her. They would actually have the man on top of the girl and go through like the whole scene.
That's a molestation.
And then go through what happened afterwards and like have her telling her parents. And it was all based on the idea that trying to blame her, trying to say that she was the one who caused the rape.
She needs to be accountable, right, Mayla?
Yeah, accountable was the term that they used, and that was telling what her part was in the event, and to the point where they would ignore what the rapist part was in the event. And this happened in some of the groups, but not in the others. I'm pretty sure there were at least 3 groups that had these rape reenactments that they did. And I was lucky that I had not been raped before the program or after either. But just going through the experience of watching my friends be fake raped or re-raped or however you want to put it, going through this experience was really scary for me. And scary for the other kids in the group, because there were 15 or 20 other girls watching this play, and there were girls participating in the play, playing different parts, sometimes girls dancing in a sexy way, if that was what had happened before, like putting on lap dances, kind of, just, this isn't therapy.
No, it's not.
And everyone that I talk to who knows about therapy is just in shock that anyone would do that kind of thing and call it therapy.
Absolutely. I mean, that is just sick. I just wanted to maybe have you talk about the lifeboat exercise that was in, I believe it was Discovery or Focus.
Yeah, I actually wrote a really detailed description of the lifeboat exercise for the crosscreek.wasp.sn.org, and it was one of the scariest things that happened to me while I was there. Just having all of my friends tell me to die was very scary. It was a guided imagery exercise, but usually those things go good. Like, it's like find your safe place or something.
Right.
And this was not at all like that.
They kind of started out like that, right? They start you out laying down on the ground.
And that's what was so scary. It's because it was like you're transforming your life. Things are going good. Your family is going good. And it was a really big shock. All of a sudden, it's like everyone banged on the table, the staff, I mean, the people that were working the seminar, and the students who are participating as staff, would bang on the floor and the tables and make this really loud noise, and then say that the ship had hit an iceberg, and we all had to vote it. There wasn't enough lifeboats, so we all had to vote on who lived and who died, and you only got 2 live votes. So
basically, I'm sorry, go ahead. There's a little delay.
Sorry. At least 50 people told me to die. And in a very emotionally confrontive way, you're looking the person in the eye, and they were saying terrible things on the microphone at the same time, too, like, what if this was your mother? Would you be telling her to die, too? How many times have you told your family to die in the past? Kind of things that are intentionally designed to hurt people. They said those kind of things constantly.
Yeah.
But especially during something like the lifeboat.
I think if I remember correctly, we were told to stand up on our chairs, and we had like 30 seconds to beg for our lives. Am I accurate on that? Yes.
Yes, and people who didn't take up the whole time were criticized for not caring enough about their life to fight for it. There was always something. They said there was no right and wrong, but there was always something that you could do that was wrong that you would get yelled at for. And that was just one of them.
I have a question for you both, if you don't mind. How much did you actually want to go back and see your families? This must be terrible being at this facility, but then you're going back to the people who sent you away. Was it, you know, something you were really looking forward to, or was there some trepidation involved with that as well?
I just real quick, I actually kept myself in the program longer because I didn't want to go home. I was afraid to leave the facility because I didn't know how to function outside of it. So I kept myself there longer. My parents wanted to come see me for a pass where basically they could come and take me, you know, to a local hotel, or like we could just stay in the area. And I told them not to even come because I wanted to be with my real family, who was my Cross Creek family. So, yeah.
I really wanted to be away from that place, but after a while, over time, they kept telling me over and over again that, like, the only life is either following the program or, like, being a prostitute in Vegas. And I really believed that, and I stayed even after I was 18 for months because I was so terrified of the outside world. I was afraid to go into a Walmart. I was afraid of, I had no idea how to handle a grocery store or talking to people. I was really afraid of the outside world, but I had been there for 3 years and 2 weeks by the time I got out. So I had been really, the program was the only way I knew how to think by the time I got out.
Just a quick question, Mela. Were you given a exit plan? I know they do that for 18-year-olds. If you want to leave the program, you're given an exit plan.
I wasn't given an exit plan. I just, when I got around close to being 18, I just told them that I didn't want to leave and that I didn't really need one. And then I was willing to, later when I was older than 18, right before I left, I wanted to go, and I didn't really care what they told me, they gave me. A lot of girls were given like $100 and a bus ticket to Vegas.
Right, yeah, that was their exit plan.
And over time, that got smaller and smaller, to where sometimes they'd only give kids, like, no money and a bus ticket to Vegas or $20 and a bus ticket to Vegas. And the Ron and the program director and just about everyone there said that the only career options for someone who didn't graduate the program was prostitution. So a lot of girls didn't because they were afraid of that.
How perfect to give someone a bus ticket to Las Vegas. Like, that's really helpful, guys. Awesome. And
it's ridiculous. Particularly telling is when certain girls were actually from Vegas and they would give them a bus ticket to, like, Atlanta or somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It was intentionally trying to keep them away from their home and the people that could support them or help them,
right,
their friends.
Right. And to keep them in the program. Because, I mean, come on, if your only options are a bus ticket to Atlanta and no money, your family won't even come help you. Yeah, you know what? I'll probably stay in this place because I have shitty food. You know, at least it's food. And I have a roof over my head. And maybe it'll get better. Maybe I'll get out soon. But I won't be in Atlanta with nobody that I know without anything. Without any clothes, without any money. I mean, it's a trap. It's a big trap, the exit plan.
And
there
they
is
did.
No exit plan.
How often were you able to talk to your family? And would it ever be possible to explain what was going on out there? What was your communication to the outside world?
Your phone calls are always monitored. They're on a speakerphone, and they're in front of your therapist. And I don't really remember much, but I remember you have to attain, I think, like, level 2 to have a phone call, and it's only 15 minutes. Mela, you might know more.
Yeah.
And how often?
I was there 8 months before I had any phone conversation with my parents, and every phone call I ever had with them was with an employee in the room with me, usually my therapist. There was no open communication. All of our letters that we wrote home were read. There was very little time that we were left alone with our parents at all. Just on when I was an upper level, and by the time I was able to be alone with my parents, I had no belief that I would be believed if I was telling them what was going wrong. And if I told them the truth, I would lose all my levels and just have to be there for longer. So a lot of girls will not talk about what's wrong, especially when they're upper levels.
Yes. So, I mean, that's just a red flag for anybody that has, like, a troubled teen that, you know, they're looking for someplace. Like, if you're not allowed to talk to your parents, unless they're supervised or, you know, communication is cut off for an amount of time, that's a big red flag right there.
Yeah, that's a very dangerous situation. Very dangerous. It's how they let the abuse continue, because girls would have totally complained if they had the ability to.
Mela, what are the options that you would suggest to parents who are potentially having problems with their teenagers or adolescents, with perhaps these young people themselves who are getting support? What could you suggest? Are there any kinds of programs that are out there that might be beneficial for people that you've come across that are actually trying to help people get well?
There's a lot of community-based help that's available, help that people can get while they're still living at home, while they're still in their community, while they're still with their peers, and being able to that's the kind of help that's going to be able to give long-lasting results, because when you pull a kid out of their environment and you put them into this foreign environment, and a lot of the attitudes they learn in that foreign environment, they don't take back with them into the real world. It wears off any of the short-term gains that the kids see disappear when they're back with their friends.
I think we also need to take a look at why this behavior is occurring. Instead of just treating the behavior and trying to change the behavior, what is the root of these symptoms? I think there needs to be, I'm going to use a program jargon word, but there needs to be accountability on the parents for maybe, you know, exposing their children to degenerative media and not allowing that to happen.
I think a lot of people also exaggerate the risks from certain risky behavior. Even really dangerous things like heroin use, most people recover on their own without medical help, without any intervention of other people, and I think it was only some less than 15% of people who are hardcore heroin addicts die of their addiction. But a lot of these teen health programs make it out like the majority of kids who are in these troubled situations are going to die if they don't get help, when in reality, the majority of people will recover whether they get help or not.
It's funny. In Germany, drinking at 16 is perfectly legal. If you're drinking at 16 in the United States, you might get sent to one of these programs.
Yeah.
Or even if you're just getting bad grades and you mouth off to your parents, well, that's an at-risk youth. You better send them away before they kill themselves.
There were some girls in Cross Creek that were there for the most ridiculous of reasons. A friend of mine was there because her mother killed herself and she was depressed for a couple of years. And... Huh. The family couldn't take how mopey she was. And so they sent her away. One of the girls was there basically because her mom had borderline personality disorder, and her mom was the one who was basically crazy. None of the kids were ever found not guilty. No one ever showed up at the doorstep and Cross Creek said, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You're healthy, so you can go home. They took everyone's money.
Yep.
Whether the girl was an IV heroin user or a good girl.
Yeah.
Well. Mela, we're running out of time here. I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience here. I really appreciate that, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to have
Mela.
To share that.
Oh, definitely. Damn it. Well, I think I'm still on the air. I disconnected the Skype accidentally there. Sinead, you still with me?
Yep.
All right. Great. It's kind of confusing with the setup I've got going on here. In any event, I'm glad that we've been able to have this conversation. I think it's a very important one. A few connections I just want to make really quickly here. Mike Sledge had a good point about the dining hall being next to the sleeping quarters. Was that the case, correct?
You know, they did some modifications while I was there. Everything was kind of relative. The seminar room was always next to the dining hall or above it. The sleeping quarters were attached, but, you know, everything was attached. It was a big square. The facility was a big square.
Okay. In many cases, I guess this was, especially in the gulags, the focus is on diet, repetition, and sleep deprivation. Also, if you look at the movie A Scanner Darkly, and this is based on the book by Philip K. Dick, the program in that for recovering drug addicts from the substance that they're putting out there, it's called New Path. And this is what all people are put on. It's a big scheme. It's a big scam, and they're the ones actually growing the drugs. So that's a Scanner Darkly again. New Path is the name of that program, New Path. So I advise anyone out there who does have some troubles to not go down any